This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. You can send questions to radioprogram@aol.com. We've got tons of questions to answer. Sometimes takes a few weeks before your question comes up, but if you listen faithfully to Q&A with Layla, eventually we'll probably hear your question turn up, and we'll answer it in detail. Layla Mudin's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She's a registered dietitian and has a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. And so that's our next question.
Okay, we've got an email from Bart. With all the nutraceutical blood thinners out today, vitamin E, tocotrienols, ginkgo, garlic, natto, fish oil, how do you tell if your blood can get too thin? Are there any labs that ascertain that?
Okay, so here's part of the problem, and this is where, I'm glad I have some medical background to explain this. When you thin the blood with such things as vitamin E and fish oil and natto kinase and, say, ginkgo or ginger, all the things that, you know, may have a blood thinning effect. Have I missed any particular ones? Garlic.
Garlic.
Know,
so, yeah. Yeah. Natto, right.
You will thin the blood and reduce the risk for blood clots, but it's hard to track that. It's actually hard to track that. Because the tests that normally reflect that, such as PT and PTT, one is proTime, one is partial thromboplastin time, may not be affected too much by those. You can, however, do what's called a bleeding time, but a bleeding time literally is you got to, you know, slice your finger in a certain way, and it's hard to have a standardized cut, and then watch how long it takes for the blood to clot. So it's not, there's not an exact metric to tell. What some people can say is, gee, you know, I've been taking, fish oil, and every time I, you know, shave my face or shave my, whatever, legs, in case of women, and I nick myself, and just really takes a long time to stop bleeding, or boy, I start to bruise really easily, then, you know that your blood is pretty thinned.
Right.
But that's a very subjective way of determining if your blood is thin. That's one of the reasons why, if you have a specific goal, and this question has come up, you know, I used to listen to Dr. Atkins when I was beginning my radio career. This is like, 30 years ago. And, people would ask him this question. They'd say, well, I have atrial fibrillation. They want to put me on Coumadin, same drug, 30 years later. And he would say, well, take this, take that, take the other thing. But I would, say to myself, gee, I'm kind of concerned that the answer that he's giving could be a little irresponsible, because you don't know if those things are going to thin the blood to the extent necessary to prevent a blood clot from developing in one of the chambers of the heart and then being shot upwards towards the brain, causing a stroke. So that's why, unfortunately, we have to rely on Coumadin. Now there's some newer medications that
those newer medications are scarier.
They are. They're scary because they're
there's
hard
no
to
antidote
reverse.
To one of them. Yeah. It starts with a P. Forget. Pradaxa.
Pradaxa.
Yeah.
And in fact, how do you know if a medication is dangerous? Well, the drug companies are obliged to write, warnings on their products. But actually, if you really want to find out the downsides of a drug, go to a legal website. Because the legal website, they're trolling for clients for malpractice and negligence lawsuits. And they will tell you all the problems associated with medications. because they got skin in the game to extract big money penalties from the drug companies. So you just turn on the TV, you can see these ads for the newer raft of blood thinners. If you've been taking Pradaxa or, you know, some of the others, and you've experienced, you know, bleeding, hemorrhage, whatever, hemorrhagic stroke, call 1-800-AMBULANCE-CHASERS and we'll go get them for you, you know.
Right.
So, you know.
Right.
But they do say that they're working on an antidote that may be available that will be, you see, when you take Coumadin, you can take vitamin K and you can reverse. You know, you're not supposed to take vitamin K when you take Coumadin because it reverses it. So you're not supposed to reverse it. But if indeed you check in, say you fall or you cut yourself and there's a hemorrhage or you sprain your ankle and your ankle's all swollen up because there's blood in your ankle, they can give you a shot of vitamin K and it'll stop the action of the drug. With Pradaxin, it's ilk. They can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. So when it comes to these blood thinners, I mean, for ordinary purposes, you can get a little blood thinning, but it's really kind of hard to know how thin your blood is. And if somebody, by the way, if anything I'm saying, we have a lot of practitioners who listen to this program. And if you can tell me a way that, we can answer this question in a better way than I have, please let me know. But, I have to say that most of the coagulation studies that we have at our disposal routinely don't shed much light on how these natural products are thinning the blood.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention is there are many people who are on a blood thinning medication already, whether it's warfarin, Coumadin, or on an aspirin therapy, who then take it upon themselves to add some ginkgo and some natokinase and additional fish oil, maybe more than they need, and so forth and so on, without telling their healthcare practitioner.
Which may be okay, or may not be.
Which may be okay, or it may not be okay.
Right.
You know?
So, for example, you know, there are studies. You know, people really worry about, you know, when you take Coumadin and you take fish oil. So the doctors will say, don't take fish oil because it will thin your blood more, and then you'll bleed. Actually, studies have shown that when you take Coumadin and fish oil, the usual result is a reduction in hemorrhagic events. So interestingly, which it does.
That is interesting.
It's kind of counterintuitive, but actually, so it would be too bad because when you're on Coumadin, first of all, you can't take vitamin K, which is a useful nutrient. Although under guidance, maybe you can take a little bit if you keep measuring your proton. You know, when doctors say, oh, you're on Coumadin, so you can't take coenzyme Q10 because that has an influence on it. It has a vitamin K-like effect. So they say, don't take that. Don't take vitamin K. Well, that's a useful nutrient. Can't take that. Then, oh, you can't take fish oil because fish oil will, you know, thin your blood too much. And, oh, by the way, you can't take vitamin E because that's, you know, and then if you're concerned about cognitive decline, you can't take ginkgo. You know, all these things you can't take when you're on Coumadin.
Yeah.
But it turns out that, you know, with supervision, sometimes you can. You have to.
Right.
And here's another one.
Being supervised, supervision is important.
Here's another one. You know, people who take Coumadin, many of them have hypertension or they have cardiovascular risk. They have arteriosclerosis. So, you can't take kaolic, which is one of the most effective things for cardiovascular risk because it's a garlic derivative and you're going to bleed to death when you take it. It's like, no, you can, under proper supervision, do that. But, you know, because of liability, you know, some of the companies are going to say, don't even go there. Or doctors are going to tell you, you know, stay away from that combination.
All right, Bart, we hope that helped. Right. Thank you very much for your email. All right. We have an email from
Nancy. Stop bothering Homer, Bart. You know, those.
We have an email from Nancy. Love your show. Have been listening for years. I have a question about my 90-year-old father. He has prostate cancer that has progressed to the bone, and he's in a lot of pain. He's also acquired trigeminal neuralgia again. We've been keeping it at bay with B12 shots, which work wonderfully.
Great.
We believe because he's
It's great to hear.
We believe because he's so dehydrated that that's playing a role. However, he says he's up to his eyeballs in water. He has edema, congestive heart failure.
So let me just say that this guy, this guy is really in trouble here. You know, there's prostate cancer and there's prostate cancer. He hasn't metastasized to the bones. He's also got a weakened immune system that caused him to develop trigeminal neuralgia. He's filling up with water for whatever reason due to the cancer, due to the heart, congestive heart failure. You know, so he's got, this guy's a lot of problems. And then he's, what, 90?
He's 90. He's barely eating now because it's harder to chew with the neuralgia. Is there anything for his pain? And Nancy was thinking about medical marijuana, but I know it's hard to get.
Try it. It might enhance the appetite and might alleviate the pain. You know, certainly. Mm. Certainly, look, I'm a big believer in medical applications of marijuana. Mm. The only thing that I feel is some of the things that are happening in California or a little bit and in Colorado are kind of discouraging because it's kind of like medical marijuana has been the nose under the tent for legalization and wide dissemination of marijuana, where you can just, you know, claim you have some ailment and go to a clinic and, you know, get your pot. And, you know, it's recreational for a lot of people. And also they may even malinger and cultivate some sort of ailment to be entitled to their pot. But, you know, when properly used, cannabidiol, CBD, can be very helpful for inflammatory conditions. There may be benefits in MS and ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, and insomnia, anxiety, depression. There's a wide variety of, applications and it's safe. It's just that because it's stigmatized, there's a lot of restrictions around it. And it's so confusing because every state, every municipality has a different interpretation. And then there's what the laws on the books versus the implementation of the laws. I mean, I actually really think it's hard to get arrested these days if you smoked a joint in public.
Even in New York?
Yeah. Yeah, even
coming
in New
back
York.
To New York.
Look, you can't get you can't do the tests that you want to do, but you can smoke pot in public, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you sell like a kilo of it to a narc, you know, you're going to get arrested. You know, that's.
Yeah, let's try not to do that. Okay.
Right. I'll try not to do that.
Oh, Nancy, wow. So yeah, medical marijuana is probably a great idea, but there are doctors who are prescribing, are there not?
It shouldn't be that hard to get. THC. You know, is available to enhance appetite and alleviate pain, for cancer patients. So, you know, that's something to try. May help.
Yeah. All right, Nancy.
To relieve
best
suffering.
Of luck to you.
In this case, as palliative treatment, because all these conditions are, you know, ultimately, going to gang up on this guy and we want to make him more comfortable.
Right, right. Best of luck with you and your father, Nancy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. we have an email from Audrey. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I really appreciate all the useful information. Developed worsening reflux from Fosamax, then took Prilosec.
Wow. See, oh boy, that is the worst aspect of medicine. Okay, let's explain.
Yeah.
This woman has a decline in her bone density. Probably, we don't even know. It may be very minor. She's given a drug that's designed to enhance bone, but what it does is it causes GERD and esophagitis. In fact, it's even been shown to increase the risk for esophageal cancer. Rarely, but that can happen. So what do they do? They say, go ahead and keep taking that thing that's going to erode your esophagus. But in order to protect you from that drug, you're going to take a acid blocker that is known to increase the risk for osteoporosis.
Yes.
So
made the problem worse.
How do they do this? Yeah. How is this justified in any sane and rational medical system? It's just to me.
Dr. Hoffman, I really think that they just don't know. They don't realize that lowering the stomach acid is going to keep them from absorbing their nutrition like calcium and magnesium. That's really what I think. But what do you think?
Doctors are not dumb. You know, doctors they're the creme de la creme of the science people. you know, who mm-hmm. are, they have to jump through hoops in terms of getting A's to get to medical school and have the highest level of refined analytical thinking to get through that process, and to then revert to making such a rookie mistake in management of a patient, it just bespeaks a blind spot in terms of understanding how the negative ramifications of medication. I think it is more of an attitude. It's like, it's easier to add a medication than to thoughtfully look at an alternative.
Another thing occurs to me. Maybe it's because they have to cover themselves. They can't say to a woman with osteoporosis, stop taking Fosamax. They won't, will they?
Well, that's right. Because the stuff that I do and that we do on a daily basis is scary to most doctors. It's like, okay, somebody has osteoporosis. And then instead of telling them, you know, the right way to do it, which is to go on a medication, mm-hmm. you do something that you depart from the standard protocol and you tell them to take vitamin D and strontium
and
MK7 vitamin K mm-hmm. and magnesium and, you know, Ostera, mm-hmm. you know, things that they've never even heard of. It's like, but what if a person breaks a bone? Then they'll come back and they'll sue me. And, you know, I think doctors are running scared from departing from standard recommendations.
Yeah.
They're just indoctrinated to think that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Audrey, as she said, developed worsening reflux from Fosamax, then took Prilosec. Listen to you for how to get off, and I have got off the Prilosec, but I still have reflux symptoms 5 to 7 days out of the week, which is mild. So Audrey takes aloe vera gel mixed with a little tart cherry juice. I'm reluctant to suck on the DGL lozenges, as you suggest, as it turns my mouth and teeth brown. Ugh.
No, that's not such a big deal. That's not such a big deal.
It doesn't. It's just your teeth, Audrey.
Just rinse your mouth afterwards. You know, it's not your teeth.
Rinse your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And take Endofen. You need Endofen.
E-N-D-E-F-E-N.
You need lots of Endofen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
E-N-D-E-F-E-N. Right. Right.
Yeah.
You want two levels.
Get her from our store. Get her from our store because it's not available generally to the public. Go to drhoffman.com. And you take, what is it? You take two?
You take two level tablespoons in enough water to dissolve, maybe half a cup, maybe a cup, mm-hmm. twice a day in between meals. That's one of the best things you could do. Mm-hmm. But you must find religion with it. You must do this every day and continue taking the DGL. Yeah.
But, you know, some people pay attention to the supplements. They want the supplements to provide relief, but they're not willing to undertake the dietary changes necessary.
Yes.
So what are some of those?
So, Audrey, if you're a coffee drinker, you either have to give it up completely or find a low-acid coffee. Mm-hmm. I know of one. It's an instant coffee. It's called Kava, mm-hmm. K-A-V-A. It's a low-acid coffee.
Not to be confused with the herb Kava.
Right, right. If you're a chocolate eater, sorry about that. Chocolate is known to exacerbate reflux. Tomato products, whether it's tomato juice, tomato sauce, if you're a spicy food fan, they're not a fan of your reflux. The other thing is are the mints, the carminatives, spearmint, peppermint. If you're a gum chewer, it's mm-hmm. probably one of the worst things for your reflux. So these are just a few of the things to watch for.
But also generally a lower carb diet is helpful for eliminating the fermentation that contributes to GERD.
Mm-hmm. Right. And going gluten-free, often gluten is an offender for somebody with mm-hmm. reflux. So mm-hmm. you have to undertake the diet. You have to continue the DGL, do the Endofen, and things should get better.
And not
things
just one or two DGLs. You got to do like 6 or 8 or 10 a day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Audrey, best of luck to you. Wow.
Good.
All right.
All right. Well, unless we have a really short question, I think we should call it quits for today's edition of Q&A with Layla. A reminder that we mm-hmm. talk about various supplements here on this program as if, you know, they're generally available to the public. And sometimes they are, but some of the supplements that we mention are physician-quality supplements that are only dispensed by health practitioners. And we make them available to our listeners as well as to our patients at drhoffman.com or hoffmancenter.com. Just click on the store and look up the product in question. And lest you think that we're very boutique-y or our markups are extraordinary, think again, because we have a price match guarantee on these products. They're of the best quality, so sometimes they'll be more expensive than discount brands, but you will assure yourself of the highest quality of supplements and safeguard your health, and also provide a bit of a useful subsidy to the free information that we share with you each week here on Intelligent Medicine. So shop for your supplement needs at the Hoffman Center store. And thanks, Layla, for joining us. And
thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
We'll do it again next week.
Yep.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.